Welcome to Beyond the Design, the podcast where we explore the artistry, innovation, and business of the design world. I'm your host, Cray Beaumont-Flynn, and today we're diving into something truly special, the power of community leadership and the future of design. Joining us today are the visionaries behind Leaders of Design, Keith Granite and Mark Zaffron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. Excellent to be here.
Oh, great. Well, let's get right into it and start with a few questions. Leaders of Design is such a unique and powerful network. What inspired you to create this community, and what was the initial vision behind it?
Well, it goes way back. So we're about to celebrate 20 years.
Congrats.
So 20 years ago, I was actually hired by Waterworks because they wanted a deeper relationship with the design community. And so we came up with this idea of doing these roundtables in six different cities, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Boston, Miami, I think that's all six, and New York. And we would do a half day of me talking about best business practices, and then the designers would then talk about the Waterworks product and what they see and would love to, for them to offer or improve upon. And we left those six cities going, oh my God, they only want to talk about business. How do we, what should we do next? Right. And we came up with our first summit, which was in Aspen in 2005, I believe. And it was 75 people. I think 60 of them happened to be clients of mine at the time. And we realized they just were thirsty for this sense of community that never existed before. And that's what sort of kicked off what was then the Design Leadership Summit. And then that lasted for about 7 years. And then we rolled it into Leaders of Design. And that's been for the last 12 years, almost 13.
So Leaders of Design isn't just about networking. It's about mentorship, education, and fostering long-term relationships. How do you ensure that the community remains meaningful and valuable to its members?
Mark, do you want to take that?
Well, sure. I mean, one of the first ways is to make sure that there are opportunities to connect. And that's why we have not only a conference, an international conference, which takes place every year, but we also have workshops throughout the year. We have something called Circles of Trust. We have all these different touch points, which is really critical to supporting each other and to building this foundation for communication and for growing, learning, and connecting with your peers.
So how does the community stay engaged? And, you know, after they leave the conference, what entails them to keep that communication and that community spirit?
Do you want to
show? Go for it.
Toss up.
You know, it's a combination of things. We try to keep them connected, and we probably connect every single month at some place. Mm-hmm. So whether it's an industry event where there's a number of our members there, so we'll have a meal or we'll do a tour of something. So, you know, when we're at Maison in Paris, there's a group doing something. So there's always something happening, right. But there's a combination of we're not just a conference. We really have these workshops twice a year that really do a deep dive into some particular subject matter. It may be fees or marketing or ownership transition. So we keep all of those moving throughout the year. And then, as Mark mentioned, the Circles of Trust are groups of 10 that have been divided up, and they meet monthly to talk about anything that they feel is pertinent to their particular group, because we think keeping it small and connected allows the fostering of relationships.
So since its inception and start, how has the mission of Leaders of Design evolved to meet the changing landscape of the industry, since this is constant? You know, our industry is ever so changing on a dime consistently.
Well, I would say that our mission's always been the same, which is to build community. Where we sort of have evolved to is understanding what our members need and how do we shift and be nimble to address those needs. And it was very early on, I think it was after the financial sort of crisis of 2008 and 2009, we realized that where we could contribute is helping designers figure out and understand what their value is. Mm-hmm. And once they understood their value, they could have a successful practice. But if they didn't understand that, then it was going to be a difficult road ahead. And so we really dived into making sure that people know how to charge for it, know how to acknowledge it, and protect it. So I would say where our mission is community, the community's is fostering value to its designers.
And so, yeah, I think that's true. And we also will often pick topics that are timely and relevant to our members. So these workshops that we mentioned previously are so important because that's where we can really identify a topic of interest, something that's affecting the industry or designers or something that we're sort of looking around corners and see as an issue out on the horizon. And by doing that, we make sure that we stay relevant and topical and can give good information to membership that they're looking for.
Well, a lot of your members are from diverse backgrounds and different parts and different sectors of the industry. How does having such a diverse international membership influence the conversations and the collaborations within the organization?
I would say that, you know, we have picked up members through the years when we've done, like when we were in Buenos Aires, a couple of those members have then followed us elsewhere. And it's always good to have that kind of diversity about whether it's a different culture or a different way of charging or billing that people can learn from each other. But the majority of our members are US-based. But even with that, if you look at different cities, people charge a different way based upon the city and their competition within that city. So we try to bring them together so we're exploring all aspects of how to run a design business, no matter where you are in the country. But I think the diversity of, I mean, as we say we're diverse, but when we really think about it, we're so focused on the high-end residential practices of design. So whether it's our sponsors or an architect or landscape architect, an interior designer, they typically, some of them have sort of outlying types of projects, but the majority of them do high-end residential. And I think peer-to-peer, that works for us because then they, when they've traveled 6,000 miles and they're sitting next to somebody at lunch or dinner, there's something to be said versus somebody that may not be aligned. So we really try for strong alignment.
Can you share an example of a success story that came out of Leaders of Design, where whether it was a new business partnership, an innovative project, or a moment of creative inspiration?
I mean, I would tell you, well, kind of half jokingly, we had a couple get married who met at one of our conferences. So I guess that's wrong.
That's a partnership.
And they're still married, which is even better. I would say that we hear over and over again, I wouldn't have this project. I wouldn't know this designer. The sort of coupling of an interior designer and architect or interior designer and a contractor, the relationship we have built for people is very evident, and we get that acknowledgement all the time.
That's fantastic. So anything else besides the marriage?
Mark, can you think of a...
Well, I hear about it all the time. I mean, really, it's about resources and having options that you would not have found out about but for the organization and but for people getting together and being able to share some of those hidden sources that are so important when you've got a project going on. So I hear stories about that every single time. In fact, we do a thing at our conference. We'll have a sponsor or a source will team up with a designer or an architect that they've worked with, and they'll do a case study on how that interaction worked, what the project was. And it's one of the most exciting things we do. People love it because you're learning from it and you're seeing actual practice in play of how these relationships can benefit.
Yeah, I would also add that I remember years ago, a sponsor coming to me and saying, I've been trying to get into this particular office just to show them my products. And when we sponsored Leaders of Design, all I had to do was say, you know, I met you in whatever city we were in, and we were a sponsor, and the doors flung wide open for them. And they had tried for many years. So again, it's relationship-based.
So either one of you can answer this question. If you could have dinner with any legendary designer, past or present, who would it be and why?
You go first, Keith.
I think I would say Sister Parrish, because she did the Kennedy White House, and it would be fascinating to hear what that relationship was like.
That's a good one. I don't know. I'm dying to have dinner with Philippe Starck. I think the guy is fascinating. He's got both sides of the brain working. He's built this incredible empire. So I love that. I don't know if I could speak the language. Jean-Michel Franck would be an awesome dinner date, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, just have them all three around the dinner table.
Let's do it. You'll come as well.
Fantastic. Well, if you had to describe leaders of design community in just three words, what would they be?
I'll go first. I think they are a group that is three words. They are creative, thoughtful, and very passionate.
I like that. I was going to say, describing the leaders of design, that it's community that creates value. I know that's four words, but.
No, hey, I'll let you go with it. But I think a passion is a good one, because you have to have passion to be in this industry. Because there's a lot of rejections, there's a lot of hurdles, and you have to be persistent to make a success, especially as a leader and as a firm owner. You actually have to love what you do, I think, to be successful.
100%. Yeah. Without that, this is not the right industry. If you're not a passionate person, I don't think this is the right industry for you.
Correct. So, Keith, what's one surprising or unexpected connection that has come out of leadership, Leaders of Design event, besides the marriage?
I would say meeting Bjorki Engels when he spoke in Copenhagen for us, and then him becoming a client and being able to do his licensing. So, you know, he's, what do they call him? He's a Starkitect, right? But he's just a fascinating man and very talented. And it was a great connection that has lasted a long time.
Well, Keith, you've been dedicated to much of your career to educating designers on the business side of creativity. What's the biggest financial or strategic mistake you've seen design firms make, and how can they avoid it?
Discounting their fees. So, you know, we always think, like, where's
that money coming
from? They know your worth, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I do try to coach designers on, when they say, well, we really want this project, but the client's pushing for a different fee structure. And I say, you know, you need to push back and say, why would you put me in a position where every one of my clients is paying my fees and you're not? You're going to be considered a second-class citizen, whether we like it or not, in our office. And why would you want to put us in a position where we have to think twice about working on your project because you're paying less? Mm-hmm. So that's, and that answer usually flies, and clients are like, why would I want you to do that? The other part is you're devaluing yourself by discounting your fees, and it means that you're not communicating what your true value is for someone to understand why you get the fees you get.
Do you think part of the problem is because of all the, where the industry has kind of changed or opened up because of television shows, Pinterest, social media, that the end user thinks it's quick, easy, and cheap?
There's certainly a lot of that, you know, it's when you're dealing with custom homes and custom projects, that needs to be an educated buyer. And I think if it's somebody who sees a home built in 7 days, you know, where, you know, concrete doesn't cure that fast, it's a little scary. And I do think some of those home shows. But on the reverse side of that, all of those shows have added to this desire to care about the way people live. Mm-hmm. And it's why we have this huge bubble during the pandemic. It's that people were at home, and whether they needed a new pillow or a new house, our industry boomed because of the attention to home. And I do think those shows also brought attention to us. So I think it's only been good. It's just you have to navigate that, the right client.
True. A lot of time was spent people sitting on their sofa looking around. It's like, yeah. I mean, it's their environment. It's your life.
Time to freshen this house up.
Absolutely. Well, Keith, your book, The Business of Design, has become an essential resource in the industry. If you could give one key takeaway from it that every designer should know, what would it be?
Well, it's funny, Craig, that what I hear all the time is, and it's something very simple, but I say in my book, if a client doesn't offer you a glass of water, they're not going to be a good client. And that's because they don't care about you. And I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, that single piece of advice has been so true. When a client hasn't been, you know, receptive and even offered them a glass of water, they have turned out to be not great people.
Interesting. I like that. I like that. I will have to make that conscious next time I go to a client interview.
So telling.
True. And when it's funny, when I'll meet with a potential new client who's read my book, that's the first thing they ask me. So I'm like, okay, they really want in.
Exactly. They bring a whole jug. Well, you've worked you've worked with some of the most prestigious names in design. What are some of the defining traits of a truly successful designer and business owner?
It's funny. I was thinking about that actual question years ago when I was on vacation, because I have been very privileged to work with some of the top designers. I remember when I opened my New York office, and I think it was 98, within a week I had Ferguson Shimami and Thad Hayes and Victoria Hagen as clients. And I was like, okay, you know, there's something here.
Right.
And I was like, and then at that time I was also working with Barbara Barry, and I was thinking about, these are very talented people. What do they have in common? And I came up with these six attributes that I really believe successful people have. And that is, they all have discipline, you know, the power to work on something until they get it done. They have a passion, like we talked about. They really love the industry and they love what they do. But they found their particular talent within that. They also have just a good knowledge. They're not necessarily overly educated, but a good knowledge of our industry. And lastly, they have chutzpah. They have the ability to take risk. And therefore, you know, because there are lots of talented people that haven't taken any risk and their businesses are not quite the same. So I think those are the attributes that make for a successful career.
True, true. And not taking no for an answer sometimes, and just be consistent and persistent in your endeavors and what your goal is, I believe, would be one of the key aspects.
To actually address not taking no, I actually try to teach people all the time how to say no, because there's actually a chapter in my second book called All the People You Don't Need in Your Life, and it's bad clients and bad employees and how to spot them. Mm-hmm. But truly, it's a hard thing for people to say no, because they don't know where that next project's going to come from. They don't know whether that one client who says, well, if you just do my living room, you can have the whole house, whether it'll actually turn into the whole house. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to go with your gut. And if it doesn't feel right, then saying no is a good thing.
What's a piece of business advice that changed the way you approach your own career?
So I spent 8 years at Gensler, and 6.5 of those years I was working directly for Art Gensler, which was a great privilege. Mm-hmm. And he told me early on that this is a relationship-based business. Get to know your clients, listen to them, and you'll know how to serve them.
Good advice. Good advice. Well, Mark?
I had a great one from Holly Hunt, actually, after I first got hired there, which was about 5 years ago. And she said, don't chase the dollar. It's all about the product. And that was just sort of a eye-opening moment. And it's really part of the ethos at Holly Hunt. But that's something that's really stuck with me over the years.
I like all these. I'm writing them all down.
It's a good one.
To better teach myself. Well, Mark, if you had to compare running a design business to a sport, which sport would it be and why?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I would say relay racing, okay? Because to run a company in the design world, you've got to have a group of individuals, but those individuals need to know how to work seamlessly as a team. They have to be able to pass the baton to each other at the right moment. There's no glory just for one, it's for all. And working together is the only way you finish one of those races properly. So I think that's probably the closest analogy I could come up with. Either that or sumo wrestling, one of the two.
Okay. I was going to say that, and asking that question, these are the two wrong people to put a sports analogy together for you.
Well, Keith, here's one for you. What's a design trend or buzzword you secretly wish would go away?
You know, I've thought this for years. It's actually the word transitional, because we know it's supposed to mean somewhere that's not traditional and somewhere that's not modern. But transitional means you're always moving or you're always changing. And right. The things that we do should be, you know, they change from time to time, but they're everlasting. I mean, if they have value, they last. And so having something transitional kind of bothers me for some reason.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I've got a good one also. I would love, this isn't a particular buzzword or trend, but I would love to see brands claiming to be luxury when they are not stop. That would really be a wonderful thing to see fade away. Brands claiming to be luxury when they really aren't.
Correct, correct. And it's very true about the word transitional, because I think that adapts culture to be throwaway. That uh-huh. It's transitional. I can get something else. Where it's traditional and contemporary and modern are forms of design aesthetics. But transitional seems throwaway, and we're such a throwaway society that brands like Holly Hunt are legacy brands. You know, they're meant to stay within a family. You can have it reupholstered, but they're long term, you know. And I truly believe what you just said about transitional. It just seems, you know,
right.
A pretend word.
Well, I remember years ago when my parents hired a decorator to do their house, and this was 1968, and my mother paid like $1,000 for a sofa. Mm-hmm. And I think my father almost freaked out. And the expression was buy once, cry once. And she had that sofa for 20 years. And
I bet.
It was in good shape.
Very true. Yeah. Well, just, like buying a good pair of shoes, it might cost a little bit more, but it's going to outlive something that is going to be thrown away in 2 years. It could last 10 years, So it's paid for itself fold. What's a book, podcast, or mentor that had a significant impact on your approach to design leadership?
Mark, do you want to go?
Sure. I would say, I'm going to say Michael Smith. I worked with Michael Smith. I was the president of his company for almost a decade. And I think there were two things he imparted on me that have really, really stuck with me. One was that when you have a design business, you need a culture of creativity, mm-hmm. that there has to be creativity throughout. And it doesn't matter if you are working in a particular creative position or not. If you're part of that organization, a culture of creativity is really fundamental to success. And I think the other thing that really stuck with me was that Michael's philosophy was, we're not in the interior design business. We're not in manufacturing. We're not in furniture. We're in the personal services business. That's what this business is about. And that I really take to heart and drank the Kool-Aid on 100%, because I think it's very astute and it makes a lot of sense. And Holly Hunt is like that as well. We are about personal services. And I think those were two really impactful philosophies from Michael that have stuck with me.
And you, Keith?
For me, it was meeting Simon Sinek. I don't know if you know Simon, but he has a major TED Talk called mm-hmm. Start With Why. And I was at the TED conference in Vancouver, and they do these sort of Jeffersonian dinners, and it was hosted by Liz Diller and the guys who started the High Line. And he was sitting there, and there was a seat next to him, and I'm like, should I see if I can sit next to him? Because I've just admired him so much. And he's like, sure, have a seat. And he said to me, so he tried to get me to explain my why. And I started talking about leaders of design, because I was there like listening, trying to hear speakers and find new content. And he's like, yeah, you're not really getting it. So let's start with this. And I'll try to make this a quick story. But he said, give me your earliest childhood memory. And I said, I kind of remember being about 5 and walking to the bathroom and seeing my shadow on the armoire of my parents in bedroom, and I screamed thinking it was somebody coming at me. And my father got out of bed and grabbed my hand and took me into the kitchen and sat down and gave me what's called an Eskimo pie, which is, a little ice cream thing, and said, this will calm you down. He goes, great. And he goes, well, now tell me something about your books. And I explained the glass of water story. He goes, well, tell me something about the conferences. Why is it, meaningful? And I said, we just got back from Kyoto, we served our team dinner in a temple that didn't allow food to be served. So we had to build a subfloor. And we hired a Michelin star chef who caught a 190-pound tuna and carved it into sushi in a temple. And he said, well, so what's, why is that so important? I said, because I realize we give people once-in-a-lifetime experiences. And he looked at me and he said, Keith, they're all Eskimo pies. It's like, you want people to take care of each other. You want to take care of people. Your why is taking care of and building a community. And it was like he synthesized all of the work that I've done, whether it's through my books or my Leaders of Design, into that. And to this day, I have a picture of an Eskimo pie on my desk to remind me of that.
I love that. That's a great. I love less Eskimo pies.
Me too.
Well, Mark, you play a pivotal role in leading and expanding brands like Holly Hunt and Michael Smith. What are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities in luxury design and interior design today?
Let's see. I think one of the biggest challenges these days are end users and how educated they are and the high standards that they have. I mean, we started talking about a little bit earlier about how television sort of started with broadening the concept of interior design and high-end luxury to more people. But these days, you know, end users expect transparency. They want to understand the provenance of pieces. They want to understand your approach to a project. And I think that's a big challenge. It's also an opportunity. I think some other challenges are the advancement of technology within the industry and keeping up with that. I think that's key if you're going to win in doing this pursuit. There's virtual reality, there's augmented, there's AI, there's programs like Studio Designer. There's just a list of tools out there. And if you don't have your arms around it, I think it's a difficult challenge. But probably the biggest challenge is something else we circle back to, which is finding resources that you can trust and that you can rely on. I think one of the things I'm most proud about with Holly Hunt is that designers, their orders are always safe with us. They can rely on us. They know that our ECDs are going to be on time. They know that what they saw in the showroom is what's going to be delivered. They know the quality and craftsmanship that's coming. And I think it's a challenge to be able to find sources that designers can rely on when the stakes are so high. But again, a great opportunity when you can find those.
Well, Mark, you have a legal background. How has that actually shaped the way you approach design business strategy?
Well, that shapes everything beyond just design and strategy for me. I mean, you know, coming from legal training, it first of all, the fundamentals, I mean, it really taught me how to think critically, how to write, how to communicate and articulate ideas, and most importantly, I think it's about risk. I think what being a lawyer has taught me, and when I'm in the business world, it's my number one job is always about mitigating risk. How can we avoid a problem for an organization or a company? And I think my legal background has really spoken a lot to that.
Well, as president of Holly Hunt, you oversee one of the most respected brands in the industry. How do you continue to innovate while maintaining the timeless appeal of the brand?
Well, it starts with our DNA. It's all about our DNA. We've been in this for 42 years now, and our mission has remained the same, which is about being the best in design, being the best in quality and methods and materials, being the best service. And I think that at its core has to always be maintained and protected. But then it's critically important that you also evolve. You have to evolve, and you do that through innovation, because that's the only way that you stay relevant. Mm-hmm. I have a secret weapon over at Holly Hunt, which is our executive creative director, Joanna Kornack. She's also a member of Leaders of Design, and she is really hyper focused on evolving while protecting our DNA, and whether that be with product, whether it be with showrooms and merchandising, whether it be with our marketing. And that's really the key for us. How do we stay relevant, protect our original DNA, and stay true to our mission while also being innovative, inspiring designers with the newest creative pursuits that we possibly can?
Well, I think a lot of designers that go into product design, it's always the aspirational is Holly Hunt. I want to be like Holly Hunt.
I love hearing that. Thank you.
Very true. Very true.
Yes.
Well, Keith, how do you see the future of interior design evolving? And what should designers be thinking about now to stay ahead of the game as we're continuing, as we said, continue evolving as an industry?
You know, it's a really tough question because, you know, it's really all about your talent and what you have to offer that's sort of that indispensable quality that others will not have. And for you to sort of think that you have to be like somebody else or compete with somebody, you never can do that. You're always going to be as only as good as you are. And so focusing on your strengths and your talents will get you through all of that. So as things change and, you know, through the years, we've seen lots of changes, whether they've been financial. The internet certainly shakes us up significantly about how people buy products. And I just think if you stay true to what you're capable of doing, whether your value is service oriented or whether it's design oriented, and hopefully it's a little bit of both or a lot of both, that gets you through any sort of trend change or because I don't think you can change your spot so easily. So it's important to stay true and be authentic. Mm-hmm. And you'll be successful.
I mean, Holly Hunt is a perfect example of that. As you said, Mark, it's continuing to make sure their DNA is their DNA as moving forward, as this industry continues to evolve. So what's your thought about the future of interior design evolving?
Well, I think, first of all, it's about personalization. I think high-end clients want what's unique and special. And they want their projects and their homes to reflect that. So I think personalization is a huge component. And I think sustainability as well. I think that's important to end users. It's important to designers. It's important to manufacturers as well. And having a piece of furniture that can last for generations. At Holly Hunt, we like to call them modern heirlooms. That's really about the best sustainability that there can be, not something that ends up in a landfill somewhere. So I think, for me, it would be that combination, that balance between personalization and sustainability.
Heirlooms is another good word. I look at it as legacy pieces.
You know? Yes.
You can still have something for 20 or 30 years and it's still going to be timeless and beautiful and have that essence and that aesthetic look and feel. Well, let's skip ahead to an important factor of the conference. The annual Leaders of Design Conference is known for its immersive experience. Why was San Sebastian chosen for this year, and what can attendees expect from this year's event? You want to go ahead, Keith?
Sure. We always pick a city that we feel takes people a little bit out of their comfort zone or that they always wanted to go to, but it may not be quite there, but it's still on their bucket list. And we'll never do London, Paris, or Rome because everyone goes there.
Right.
And our idea is, we want to keep people together. We don't like break up into like small groups and go all over the place, except for one dinner where we do it, what we call a dine around. And it's really about exploring a city that may not be, you know, first choice of where you think you're going to go. But when you get there, you're like, wow, I've never seen it like this or never thought I could see it like this. And, you know, that's why we pick Kyoto and we pick Bruges. And, you know, we were just in Stockholm last year. They're all sort of walkable, they're relatable, and there's always some kind of architectural significance or cultural significance. In the case of San Sebastian, it sits in the heart of the Basque region, which has more Michelin star restaurants than anywhere else in the world. And so why is that? What's that attraction? Mm-hmm. And what can we share with people about building a strong culture like that? And, you know, we're doing our last night, what they have to look forward to, is a great leadership session, but also our last night we're doing basically a black tie in the Balenciaga Museum, which is stunning, and it'll be a very cool experience.
I'll get my ticket now. What are the dates for this year?
We start April 5th, is it, Mark? Because we have a pre-trip that starts in Valencia for 3 days. I think it's April 5th through the 7th.
Around the corner.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Mark, one of the core values of Leaders of Design is bringing together people from different disciplines and backgrounds. How do you design the event to maximize the collaboration and fresh ideas from a diverse background that's attendees?
Well, I think a lot of it starts right from the first day of a conference. It's the getting together of the full group. We sit at these round tables whenever we have our sessions, working sessions, or we're doing other social events. And that just helps to support conversation between each other, connections between each other. We love the fact that there are a variety of perspectives all coming from a common place. And when you have that exchange of ideas, you just grow from it. And so we make sure that people are sitting next to each other that they may not have known, or they're making a new friend or a new acquaintance. And I think that's super important.
It's like having a dinner at your home. You don't want people to know each other. You want them to talk left, across, and right, you know?
Exactly.
Not your spouse next to you because, yeah.
And we put a ton of time into seating arrangements, and that's exactly the reason that we do it, because it's so important to break out of your comfort zone a little bit and to be able to meet someone new and to learn from them and to express your own views with them. And it's really what makes these trips so fantastic.
And Mark and I have a partner, Dana Cola, who, you know, we couldn't exist without. But, you know, one of her skills is creating this algorithm that makes sure that people are not seated at each meal together. And it's hard when you have, you know, 100 people and you have to shift them around for every meal. But we really painstakingly do that because it's important to create that community by meeting other people, and not just, we don't want any clicks. So correct. She's very skilled at all of that.
Well, I think it's human nature too, to find your packs, your likes within people. So breaking that apart and making people to really discover new people and new ideas from communicating with one another is helpful in that experience. It is.
And we have that saying that people do check their egos at the door. These are, you know, people with really great big businesses, and they share, and they love being part of this community.
So Keith, what would you say is one piece of advice for first-time attendees who want to get the most out of Leaders of Design experience?
Well, I end my sort of welcome speech every year with the same sort of three things, which is meet somebody new, learn something new, and leave with a renewed sense of value. I guess so that's what I would tell somebody who's new. Don't just sort of latch on to somebody you might know. And we will make sure you're in a safe zone where you feel comfortable meeting lots of new people. And it's just people embrace each other in a great way. I mean, one of my favorite things to do is sit in the hotel lobby and watch people arrive for the first time and just see how they're connecting with each other. It just warms my heart to see that they've built these relationships, and it's all about them now. It's not about Mark or I or Dana. It's really about this community.
Well, Mark, how do these curated city explorations inspire members in their own work? What's the feedback and response that you get after the attendees leave?
I think there's a number of different ways. One that I hear often from members is the architecture. They get exposed to, we make sure on these trips that they're obviously design oriented. And so when you're able to go to somewhere that you would normally never see, somewhere on the globe that has this amazing, unique architecture, and you're working with the type of creative people that are members, I think it really spurs a lot of inspiration for them. But also it's the cultures. What's so great about the trips and how Dana helps organize these is that she ensures that we get immersed into the culture of the locations where we're at. And that is just someone who has an open mind and is open to experiences and learning. There's nothing more inspiring than being immersed in a different culture for a number of days and seeing how they approach design and how that fits into their lives.
So let me ask you this, because you talk about inspiration. What motivates you and inspires you about Leaders of Design?
I get motivated by the members. I mean, the members are so inspirational for me. As I said in the beginning here, the three words that I think categorize them are really about creativity and thoughtfulness and passion. And being around 125 of these people who are all founders or principals of design or architectural mm-hmm. firms, who are thoughtful and intelligent, who have passion about arts and about architecture, and are creative when it comes to unique ideas. There's nothing more inspiring. And that feeds me almost for the whole year until the next trip that we have to go to.
How about you, Keith?
Well, that, and I just want to add, as far as how the impact of where we've gone, you can actually look at the pages of the magazines. I remember after we were in Marrakesh a couple of years later, really seeing the influence in some of the projects that were published. And I also remember after Japan, Gil Schaefer, the architect, showing me a sort of yoga retreat room that he had done based upon his experience in Japan. So they do show up. These experiences do show up through their work. But what keeps me going every year is exactly what Mark said. It's the people. It's seeing how they're connected to each other, how much they care about each other, mm-hmm. and support each other. And, you know, when you build a community that never existed before, it's just something that just, you know, it's beyond you. And that feels great, that this is something that could last beyond us. It's a legacy to build something like this. And we hope it continues, you know, for many generations.
So a question for both of you. What are you most surprised about on this journey since you've been involved with Leaders of Design? Learned about the community, learned about the industry, or learned about yourselves being involved in the community?
I'll go first. I mean, I think it's the power, learning the power of community. It's something that I think a lot of people take for granted. And if you're not really part of a community, you wouldn't be aware of that, of how powerful it can be. And it goes beyond just the professional confines that you may have met under, that draw you, that where there's some commonality. It goes way beyond that, and it goes into all aspects of life. And I think the power of community is something that I really didn't understand the degree of it until I got involved with Leaders of Design. But now it's one of the most it's one of the most powerful characteristics of the organization.
Yeah, for me, I think it's pretty much the same thing. It's really about the community. But like I said, it's when I see people interact with each other, mm-hmm. and whether it's 7 people in Paris or 125 people in, you know, Israel, and see how they interact with each other, we've created something that belongs to them. And for me, that, you know, that was an ultimate goal and dream, that a community could be built that is supporting what I've dedicated my career to, which is the business of design. So the thankfulness that we see based upon the success of their businesses, because they have somebody to lean on, you know, that expression is lonely at the top. Well, if you bring the top together, it's not so lonely. Right. So that's what I think we've created.
Good point. So are you able to share what's going to happen in 2026?
We have this sort of time-honored tradition, and that is in a couple of weeks at the final night of the San Sebastian conference, we will announce next year's. So we won't tell you that, but we will tell you, because it is 20 years, it's going to be significant. It's going to be a place that pays tribute to for the origins of our profession. And I think it'll be something that we're going to have a waiting list of people, because it's a pretty significant trip.
Spectacular. But spectacular is a word that comes to mind.
Oh, you can share. No one's going to know. I'll keep it a secret.
Cray, we can. You should come. Cray, you can join and come and join as a member, and then come on that 20th anniversary trip with us. You won't be disappointed.
I definitely will.
There definitely, you know, we hear all throughout the conference, where's it going to be next year? And they try to trick us and they'll just say a name of a city thinking it'll get a reaction out of us. But it's one of the greatest things, is to be able to expose it at the last night and get the reaction we get from people. And it gets them excited about what we have planned for a year ahead of them.
So besides the community aspect and bringing people collectively together that are in the same thought, theory, and industry, why should someone get involved and be a part of Leaders of Design?
You know, I would say that if you're looking for not just support, but the ability to share knowledge and learn from each other and learn from people who have made great strides in the industry and great mistakes at the same time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than knowing that you're going to be listened to. And that's the one thing that we talk about often. When we have any session, they're at round tables because we want engagement at those tables. Our conference is never really about looking at a stage and hearing a speaker. It's very interactive. So how we seat people at meals and how we seat people during the conference, it's about them learning from each other. We can only provide so many experts, which we do all the time, but the true learning comes from how they share with each other the knowledge they gain from those experts. And so anybody who's really wanting to be a part of this community has to have the ability to listen and the ability to share. And if they're willing to do that, we want them.
Yeah, I would underscore that. The education is enormous. I mean, of course, it's important for the community and the networking and the inspiration, but I've witnessed it firsthand. And some of these sessions that we have are like having a master class in how to run an interior design firm. And you only get that when you're dealing with peers and colleagues who are at a certain level and have either achieved it through trial and error or otherwise and can share that with your peers. The educational component of Leaders of Design is a very, very substantial part of what we offer.
So what do each of you personally, as participants and also those that are involved within Leaders of Design, take away after each conference ends?
I learn every single conference that I go to. I learn about insights from designers. They're also our customer base, and so they're extraordinarily important to me, and everything we do at Holly Hunt is from the client's perspective. So being able to be immersed with them in that type of environment where you are sharing and educating each other and learning together, I think the lessons that come out of that are innumerable for me. I'm able to come back and really understand, think about it and process it and really understand from our client's perspective what's important to them, what's meaningful, and what works.
Yeah, and I learn from the leadership's experts we bring in. I learn from other designers who, you know, after all these years, I don't think there's anything I haven't heard of as far as, you know, transitions that have happened in firms. But there's always something. There's always some nugget to learn from somebody. And I think you have to be sort of a sponge. And I believe in sort of a constant lifelong learning experience. And I don't think we ever want to sort of rest or settle on what we know. And so that's why different cities, that's why we love new members, because they always bring a different perspective to us. And so I think it's always evolving my thinking based upon what I'm hearing and being attuned to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, is you got to be a good listener. And one of the things I say in my book is God gave us two ears and one mouth, so we should listen twice as much as we speak. And, you know, I really follow that advice.
It's funny that you say that, because the episode before we got on there today, the guest said exactly that. We have two ears and one mouth.
Really?
He must have read your book.
Let's hope so. We should trademark that, Keith.
Exactly. So tell me this, Keith, what's next for Leaders of Design?
Well, as we approach the 20th year, it's a great question, because we have a cabinet of advisors that we love working with. They are the leaders in, you know, their firms and leaders in this industry. They represent both the interiors and architecture and even vendor side of this. And we lean on them to really, we do a retreat with them once a year. And we're planning that again this year. And as we approach 20 years, we are thinking about, what is it that people love about what we do? We don't want to create any sort of lethargy and just, oh, it's another conference, it's another city. It's obviously a big world and we can pick a lot of different great cities to go to. But we really want to provide a place that people want to come back to every year. And we have members who have never missed one conference, which is, you know, very admirable. But in fact, we want them to keep on coming back because there's something new they're going to learn or some experience that they've never had before. So, you know, I do think that it's always nice to have a milestone and then to rethink what that next decade's about. And I think you'll see some changes from us, but only to serve our industry. Nothing significant, I think, because I think this community is well intact and very strong.
So, Keith, what's one piece of business advice you've received that has stuck with you throughout your career?
Well, I think it goes back to sort of those days at Gensler, and it relates to what Mark said about Holly, is that don't pay attention to profit. If you do a great job and you serve your clients well, the money will follow. You know, just be smart about how you run your business. Right. But also, if you focus on the bottom line, you will lose sight of what the top line can be and the opportunities that exist if you're so focused on making a dollar. And so I think profitability as a byproduct of a successful practice was the best advice that I've been given.
And Mark, how about yourself?
I'll use another Hollyism. Holly, and we say it all the time around the offices, never let best get in the way of better. And to me, I think that's one of the best business philosophies one could have. It obviously means never to sit on your laurels and to constantly be looking to innovate and to stay relevant. And no matter what you've achieved in the past, you can be proud of it. But the future is a wide landscape. It's an open landscape. And it's important to ensure that you never let what you've achieved in the past stop you from achieving even greater things in the future.
Pretty good. Well, Keith, how can someone who is interested in Leaders of Design get involved or apply to become a member?
Well, it's easy. Just go to our website, which is leadersofdesign.com. There's a whole application process. And then Dana will forward that to us. And there's certain criteria. You have to have three members that you know make recommendations for you. If you don't know three people, then we have an interview process that our cabinet helps us with. But we're open to anybody who wants to come as long as they meet that criteria. And it's all sort of spelled out on their website.
Mark, any final thoughts or advice for our listeners?
Continue to listen to this podcast because Beyond Design is fantastic. I appreciate you having us here. We love talking about Leaders of Design. Keith and I and Dana are so passionate about it. And there's such a milestone that we're approaching. And I just feel very privileged to be a part of it. So thank you.
Well, thank you for the plug. Keith, well, about yourself.
I just say thank you as well, Craig, about being on here. It's, you know, it's always something we love talking about because we're very proud of what we've built. It's not an easy industry. It's, you know, it's not something that if you, like you said earlier in the beginning, if you don't have a passion for this, there's a lot of other things you should be doing or could be doing. But when I, you know, when I was talking about the six attributes, you know, finding your talent, like for me, I thought I was going to be an architect my entire childhood until I finished college. And I realized that wasn't my talent. My talent was to surround myself by things of beauty in architecture or design, but to help people run a business, that a creative business at that. And so I think finding that has allowed for, you know, this sort of crazy career I built for myself.
Well, gentlemen, this has been such an inspiring, insightful conversation. Leaders of Design is so much more than just a network. It's a movement that's redefining collaboration and leadership in the design world, and it's much needed. And I think you should be getting a lot of applications fairly soon, I hope. At least from one member, you know?
We love that.
That's all
we need. Thank you so much, Keith, and so much, Mark. Continued success to you both and to Leaders of Design. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of Beyond the Design. If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and share with your fellow design enthusiasts. Until next time, keep leading, keep designing, and keep inspiring.
Hi, you're listening to a Pod for Good Media Network podcast.
We are a network that provides podcasting production services and a supportive community in which podcasters can thrive. If you're a podcaster local in the Tulsa area, we would love to have your show on the network. If you are interested in starting one, we would love to help you get started. Find us online at podforgoodmedia.com and fill out our Pod With Us form. Happy podcasting.